City have another chance.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is Gavin here with Adam and Chase to discuss the 2-1 come from behind victory at Inter Miami. What an amazing game that was. Extreme hype on Twitter after the game. Just seeing the players celebrate in wild fashion in the locker room, seeing the fans that all traveled, spent their hard-earned money to go and have some fun at Inter Miami Stadium. It was a great game. Maybe not great while watching it, but of course when rewatching it, knowing the scoreline and knowing what happens, it is always fun to rewatch afterwards. That is exactly what I have done. Before we get started, of course, hit up Cappy Subs. They have amazing food. Hit up Jonathan Ridner. They have great bonsai trees. And we can get on with the show. Adam, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm pretty tired, but, you know, it's good to talk some soccer. I did notice, Gavin, you already got something wrong.
What did I get wrong?
It's Outer Fort Lauderdale Stadium, not Inter Miami Stadium. I would just like to point that out, that it is in Fort Lauderdale, not Miami.
Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah,
we need to get our facts straight here.
Sorry, I messed up the location. My bad. Chase, how are you doing today? Are you going to tell me that I was wrong about something too?
No, I think I'm going to tell Adam that he is wrong about something. I believe it is Outer Pompano Beach, if we're going to be so specific.
Is it Pompano?
I'm 98%.
I thought is Lockhart, right?
No, it's the Drive Pink Stadium.
Yeah.
Is that at Lockhart? Are you telling me, Adam, that Twitter has led me astray?
Yeah.
And it is not in Pompano Beach.
So when you
is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Yeah.
When you Google it, it says Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Also known as Lockhart.
Well, you've Googled it. You've told me I'm wrong. You've presented me with evidence. I'm still going to tell you that you're wrong. And we're going to move.
The circle of life moves on.
I'm a little tired as well, but like Adam, very excited, very ready to talk some soccer.
Yeah, and let's go ahead and get started with you, Chase, as you missed the last pod. A lot of pundits and fans alike have been saying we had a pretty slow start to the game, and that we struggled in the early outings. And I kind of disagree with that statement. I didn't think that we looked too bad. And I wanted to get your thoughts on those opening phases, because everyone thinks of the big save that Austin had to make. But for me, that was just kind of lucky bounces more than Inter Miami dominating the game. So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on the opening outing. Am I right in saying that it was just kind of, you know, maybe more of a cagey affair and the ball bounced Inter Miami's way, or were they actually playing well and we were struggling to get into the game?
Yeah, I mean, Marisa Du on commentary was very complimentary of them for the entire game. And also, before we start talking, my throat is a little, I work with children now, so I got a little bit of a throat thing going on. So my apologies for this, this awful voice that y'all will be hearing for the entire time. But, Marisa Du was very complimentary of Miami, and I think, you know, I'm never really one to, like, make excuses. Like, I think that there's a lot of validity to them, but, you know, you can only kind of control what you can control. But I think it is worth pointing out that, you know, it was our third game of the week, and we had just played, albeit a relatively laid-back game against San Jose a few days prior, but, you know, still a full 90 minutes of competitive soccer. The team was definitely a little bit fatigued, I think it's fair to say. I do think it's understandable. Miami was trying to press a little bit, I think, and they maybe did look all right, but I do think that they were kind of taking advantage of the fact that we just kind of weren't, like you said, able to get into the game. I felt like there was a lot of time where we just were kind of pinned down. And if we were able to get possession, we weren't able to maintain it long enough to kind of maybe find our shape forward and get some space out and kind of move the ball around. I'm not going to say like it was disappointing. I think, you know, like I said, there are a lot of external factors that might have contributed to that. But I don't know. I just felt like, you know, as much as maybe they got into the game later, I think Andres Pereira and Junior, so, you know, they weren't great on the goal. But I think that Andres Pereira especially was doing really well with, like, ball progression and stuff like that. And you know, we started to get a little bit more dynamism as the game moved on. We definitely started a little bit slow. We looked like we were not really threatening, and I was starting to get a little nervous. Like you said, it might not have been the greatest viewing experience, at least the first half, because it kind of led me to have this impending feeling that a goal was coming. And although it never did, it's still not a great way to feel while watching a game. And obviously, if you're feeling that way, it's your team is not necessarily playing as great as you would hope. But, you know, it's I'm interested to hear your thoughts as you maybe had a little bit of a different take, saying that you were quite impressed.
Maybe impressed isn't the right word out of my mouth, but just like, yeah, come on now, don't do that. I wasn't as down, you know. This is a rivalry game. It is 3 games in 6 or 7 days or whatever it was. And it's just kind of like, yeah, they're going to be up for the game. They're at home. They're going to high press and start off the blocks flying. But like, all in all, I don't really think that they were that dangerous. I don't really think that they were pushing us back and we were really struggling to get out. I think that, you know, just a couple, like, we were playing fine. And then they were just kind of getting a little lucky. So, for example, we have a good counterattacking opportunity, and then DK just has a bad touch, and then we give the ball straight back to them. I don't think that's on Miami playing good. I think that's on us just having a bad touch in a moment. You know what I mean? So I thought we were fine. I wasn't too worried after the start of the game. Obviously, Austin making a huge save early on in the game and keeping us in it there. But definitely not as bad as the pundits or even some fans would make you have to believe that, oh, we were lucky to be in this game after the first 15, 20 minutes. Adam, over to you now. The first half, really, there wasn't much in it in terms of anything exciting. So let's just go ahead and move on to the second half. And obviously, let's just start. Mauricio Pereira and Van der Vaart are taken off at halftime. Pereira due to injury. What were your thoughts on Van der Vaart coming off as well?
I thought both subs were needed. Even because we didn't know about Mauricio's injury at the time. I thought it was a tactical sub, and I agreed with it. Because Benji in the first half, I just want to touch on that a little bit. The word I would use to describe it from an Orlando City perspective is sloppy. We were trying to do our normal, you know, tiki-taka, all that. Possession, it's pretty. You know, we have individual skill players that are really good. Van der Vaart is one of them. We thought that we were going to be able to pass around Miami and, you know, put two behind them in the first half, and it didn't happen. So what does
Oscar you see, I disagree a little bit.
Well, let me finish this. Because keep in mind, Miami is also missing defenders, and their midfield isn't that great. Mm-hmm. I mean, Matuidi aside, who isn't in good form, their midfield is not good. So we thought that maybe this would be a game that we could come out and be dominant from the whistle. With our style of play that we prefer to play with, that didn't happen. So what do? We have a good coach who recognizes this and says, okay, let's switch it up. Let's play a little more direct. We're going to put in Benji Michel, who's a direct player. We're going to put in Chris Mueller, who's a direct player. Now, that's not to say neither of those players are skilled. Obviously, they both are. Their play style is much more, okay, I'm going to kick the ball. I'm going to go forward. I'm going to try to do something. I'm not going to do all this, you know, back and forth and spin around and all that. We're going to make a decision. We're going to go with it, and we're going to live with the results. And that's kind of what this game needed. So I actually really liked, I was even thinking at halftime, like, man, I want Benji or Chris to come on like at halftime, and both of them did. So I was very happy with that, actually.
Yeah, so I was happy with the changes as well. The only thing I disagree with is I felt we were playing a little bit more, you know, the way I tweeted, the way I worded it in the tweet was Poppy set up for a, what did I say? Not Mauricio Pereira, Oscar Pereira set up to win 1-0, and that's exactly what he did, minus the two bangers. I feel like we set up to get the Poppy special, and that's basically what we did, in my opinion.
Okay. Set up with Mauricio Pereira, Luis Nani, Daryl DK, Sylvester Van der Vaart, and try to score one goal. That's not a one goal lineup. It should never
Chase, come in here and be the tiebreaker. Where are you at? Were you more, we tried to attack and it was sloppy, or was it we were kind of going for counter?
They were trying stuff. It just wasn't coming off.
I mean, I'm not saying we were full on counterattack. Like, obviously, we tried to build up, but I feel like we were just a little bit more cautious in the game. Chase, what say you?
I mean, I do think when we were winning possession and getting on the ball, we were trying to hold it. Like, we weren't really necessarily just trying to get and go and hit on the counter. Mm-hmm. And I would agree that it was a relatively, not overly attacking lineup, but it was just kind of your standard, 4-3-3 with, an attacking midfielder and two attacking wingers. It wasn't like the 4-4-2 that we saw rolled out against San Jose or anything like that. But I do understand what you're saying, how it almost kind of played that way, where we looked at least a little bit more conservative. And I think, this is always such a terrible point for analysis or anything like that. And I will concede that here. But I think we really just were very fatigued and very tired. So we found ourselves sitting back a little bit more. And once Miami started, I don't think Miami was dangerous for a lot of the game. Adam, you said, Gavin, Adam, both of y'all said it. They weren't really that dangerous. They were just having the ball a lot. And having the ball maybe in our attacking third, but they weren't really doing a whole lot with it. Like, the Carranza chance was their probably best chance of the game, and it came off of a lucky bounce.
And then they had that one moment of brilliance from Higuain, but I mean, that was it. That was really their two goal chances.
Yeah, but like Gavin said, that's kind of like you said, a moment of brilliance. It wasn't necessarily like a well-worked chance, I would say. And we were also really just kind of lazy on that. But I would probably agree with Adam, my bad on that, Gavin. Like, I think that we were looking to try to get on the ball and go forward a little bit, but we just did not have the juice in the tank, if you will, to be able to constantly be on the ball and push forward and control.
Also, Miami came out with their hair on fire. I mean, they were pressing like crazy for those first 15, 20 minutes. And I remember my roommate saying to me, like, hey, they're not going to do that the entire game, right? I'm like, no, there's no way.
Hey, Adam, real quick, your mic is echoey. I don't know if it changed to your default mic, just letting you know that. Not like I'm going to edit this part out or anything, just wanted to let you know so you can look at that. But I guess I will just go ahead and default to you guys and say, maybe I'm wrong on this one. What?
There you go. I think it sounds better.
I think that sounds better.
Yes.
Okay. I can restart that.
You think I'm editing that out? Bro, I am tired. No way. We can go ahead and move on.
I'm loving the production.
Anyway, so my roommate was saying to me, like, there's no way they keep this up, right? I'm like, no, they can't do this the entire game. That's impossible. That's what happened. After like 15, 20 minutes, they stopped. And that's when the game started to look a little more even. Now, we were still sloppy in that first half and had several build-up opportunities that we didn't take advantage of. But after we stopped that frenetic press, they had nothing on the other side either. So, I mean, Lewis Morgan had a few decent dribbles. And, I mean, it's sad that he's their best player by far.
Yeah, I mean, I like him.
Lewis Morgan's game. I do respect his game. But you can't win if he's going to be by far your best player.
Right. Which is incredible when you look at some of the names they have on their
And team. He was supposed to be an afterthought for them.
Right.
And it's like, they're like, oh my God, Lewis Morgan. Like, yeah, he's pretty decent. Who else you got?
Literally nobody.
Yeah.
So obviously the second half commences. We see Pereira come out and Vendervater come out. And we see basically Benji come in. We see Mueller come in and Miami get the first goal through a very strong strike in Gonzalo Higuain. Chase, you said that there was some lazy defending there. I mean, Gonzalo, I think it's just a moment of brilliance.
It was a very good hit. I mean, it was a very good hit.
And did you see the touch before it? I think that little touch right before it throws people off because it doesn't look like a normal touch. Like he takes the touch quicker than you would expect. And so for me, it's just like a moment of brilliance, takes the quick touch and then pushes like that quick touch pushes it out of his feet. And then it's a brilliant strike.
Yeah, but I just think that Gonzalo Higuain, like as much as, people like to joke about like his ability as a player, which a lot of it is understandable. You know, he's choked in some big moments, and he's had issues with fitness even in MLS and things of that nature. Like, he still is obviously a very, very good player, and I'm sure everyone is aware of that. And I think that we as a club, as a team, should have been aware of that. And mm-hmm. I don't think he should have been able to pick up the ball where he did, carry the ball maybe 25 yards across field with really, I don't even know if pressure would be the word to describe it. Like, I think Junior has been great this season. I just think that this was a bad moment. Initially, I thought it was Andreas. Andreas wasn't that great either, but Junior, like, just kind of allowed him to run, gave him space until he was, like, 25 yards out, which, you know, conversely, like we saw with Nani, a player of Higuain's ability, and he it's something he's consistently shown throughout his career. Like, I don't really think that you can give him that amount of space. And the reasoning because of that is because
spoiler alert, they did. These.
Yeah, they definitely did. I like Junior just kind of shielded him, but he was maybe like 3-4 yards away, which, I mean, you don't even really want to be giving him a yard of space. And then once it got to Andreas, he didn't really make any of an effort to, for lack of a better term, just kind of get in the way and block the shot. It wasn't great. I think I am just going to, once again, like I've done for a lot of stuff to this game, I'm going to chalk it down to something that is about fitness that they probably have experienced over this week, which is slightly understandable, but still, you know, it's Gonzalo Higuain is capable of those moments of brilliance. And I do agree with you that it is a moment of brilliance, but it was definitely helped by the fact that we were doing some optional defending, optional pressure there. He just shouldn't be able to carry the ball and have space to shoot from that angle, because he will hurt you. Like, I don't think it was Brandon Austin's fault, because I think the strike was good, but I think a lot of the blame lies on the midfield. And yeah, just the midfield, really.
Question.
Yeah.
How playable do we think Odor Russell is as a starter?
Are you talking ability or, like, fitness?
I'm talking about fitness and athleticism at this age. Which I know he's not old, but he's had numerous injuries that have obviously snapped his speed.
I think that he is playable if you are at home and you have a good squad around him.
Yeah, if we're holding the ball a lot. But...
Like, yeah, if we're so expected to dominate.
Yeah.
That's my, like, obviously the strength of our team is the midfield. And I know we have flashy attackers and all that. But it doesn't work unless we have, honestly, some combination of Pereira, Urso, and Mendes back there. It doesn't work without those four players. If we're playing Pereira, Urso every game while Mendes is out, and then Mendes is going to come back and play every game, man, it would be really, really nice to have every step up his depth there. And like, I don't want to rely on Desart to have to start games outside of an open cup match that may or may not happen.
I mean, what's wrong with Desart starting? I believe he started our first ever he's win against special. Atlanta United.
He's nothing special.
Is Yuri anything special? He's more athletic.
He used to be.
I wouldn't have an issue with. So what made you think of Yuri? Just the fact that.
The fact that our midfield's getting fatigued.
Yeah. Okay. I mean.
I think that we really could use one more guy to step in there and be like, I belong in this rotation. I don't believe that Desart's done that, or else he would be.
You see, okay, so Chase saying that the midfield is fatigued, I believe it. Like, the midfield is obviously going to have some heavy legs after that match week that we had. And luckily we got a week off until
But it's not going to get much better.
But I don't 100% put that goal down to fatigue. You know,
No, not that goal, but we definitely did see signs of fatigue in this match, okay. And it's not going to get better. We have a very heavy schedule this season.
No, obviously.
Especially if Open Cup's going to play, and we might be included in Open Cup.
Right, but what I put the goal down to more is, I don't remember where I saw the stat or read it or heard it, but right now, maybe it was Evan Weston on Twitter. He was saying that we had the lowest XG per shot against. In the entire league, so we're giving up the least amount of good shots, if that makes sense, or like the least good shots per shot or whatever. So maybe that made sense, maybe it didn't, but basically the opposition are not taking good shots against us. And you know, that doesn't happen by accident. You know, we're forcing
teams. The whole design of Poppy's defense.
Right. So teams are taking these long range shots that aren't expected to go in. Gonzalo Higuain's shot is not going to go in that often when he takes from out there. Maybe he scuffs it. Maybe it gets blocked. Maybe the goalkeeper makes a good save. Maybe it hits the post. Like, that is a rare goal to go in. And so I think Poppy is okay with allowing shots like that because we had we had defenders in front of him. We had defenders around him. And Gonzalo Higuain just pulled out a piece of brilliance. And so that goal doesn't really worry me
It's not the goal that worries me. It's more that Chase mentioned the fatigue, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I could see that being an issue.
No, yeah, and it definitely can. Like, but
have the attacking depth to weather it. And yes. Defenders, it doesn't really matter, and Schlegel's coming back anyway. In midfield, midfield worries me a little bit, unless we're just going to ride our guys and they're just going to be super Iron Men.
I mean, look who we have next. We're home against New York Red Bulls after a week's rest, and then we're away to Chicago, who are the worst team in the league. I mean, obviously, no game is a given, but I think we can ride with Yuri Rosell possibly starting against New York Red Bulls. And that's probably what we should do. You know, let's give Urso a rest, and let's get Yuri Rosell in the game, and maybe get Urso off the bench. I don't think starting Yuri against New York Red Bulls at home is going to affect the outcome of the next game.
Watch, we're just going to drop both Red Bulls games and then win everything else.
God, I hope not. But, you know, there's always a bogey team when you have a successful season. But, all right, so Chase worrying Adam there with the good old fatigue analysis. So they score the goal, obviously. And at that point, I'm watching the game because I got to see the second half live. And I'm like, where is this goal going to come from? Like, where is it going to come from? I'm not seeing it right now. We hadn't really created any moments of danger. I think maybe one with Chris Mueller, but nothing crazy. And just out of nowhere, Janssen, long ball. Nani, insane cross. Chris Mueller, beautiful connection on the shot into the net. Chase, what was your reaction to just how simple that goal looked and just how simple every single player in that move made it look?
No, yeah. Not to tap myself on the back, but I remember we had the conversation of like, when Schlegel was playing, he was playing really good, and Janssen was coming back in the fold. Like, we all asked, like, who would be, you know, are you keeping Schlegel and Antonio Carlos as your starting 11 or what? And I can't exactly recall what you said, but I think I was maybe in the minority who was saying that Janssen should be the one.
Were the only one that said
Yeah, Janssen. Listen, I do too. Listen, I don't want to, you know, don't want to hype myself up or anything, but that for me is not the main reason. But I don't know. Honestly, it may be one of the main reasons that I want to keep Robin Janssen in this team. Like, he has.
I mean, for me, that would be the main reason. Yeah, that's the best argument is his left foot.
He has one of the best passing ranges on our team, including players in the midfield. And I mean, which not to slight anyone, I think, you know, Sebas has gotten a lot better this year. And, you know, what? But, anyways, it's his ability to either step up in the midfield and play an advancing ball forward on the ground or just step back there. If he's given space, tap the ball forward and just freaking ping anyone in stride, whomever it may be. It's so valuable and it's worked wonders. And it's especially valuable in games like this where, you know, like you guys say, like you'll be watching this game thinking like, oh, where is this game going to come? And all it takes is for us to have just started to build up, the ball is at his feet and a player finds a little bit of space in behind and he can hit him. You know, a decent amount of time is a lot more than you would reasonably expect for a center back in this league. And like Nani, of course, Nani is really in the form of his career here at Orlando. He's getting better with age somehow. And the cross was well hit. But I also really think that the finish looks tough. It's something that like it might be hard to kind of describe like. I don't know. I think that there's probably like a fair amount of designated players, attackers in this league who maybe would have skied that. You know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't like well hit. It wasn't really in defeat. There was a lot of loft on it. It was a really good finish. And
it was a true volley.
Yeah.
He hit it off the volley.
Yeah. It was quite a goal. And Chris, I think it's very important for him because, you know, it's his first goal of the season. And he's been pretty good creatively, especially creating chances. But, you know, he's last year, one of his biggest, you know, biggest upsides was his goal scoring ability. And he struggled. And even like Sylvester Vanderwater, like I was kind of saying that I think maybe he should be the starter. Like he looked really good. He didn't look great in this game, but I don't want to discredit what he's done in, you know, his short time here. But I'm hoping that that is something that can kind of get him back into his form of last year where he was looking like an MVP candidate, certainly a best 11 candidate for a lot of it. And, you know, this was a really good game for Chris. And I think it was something that was kind of necessary, particularly now, you know, just getting left off the Gold Cup roster. I know I'm a little bit rambling here, but moments like these, I think are really good for a player's confidence. And all around, like you said, it was three brilliant moments of skills from three of our, honestly, maybe our most skillful players, not including like Mauricio Pereira or something like that.
Right.
It was quite a moment.
It was a huge goal, obviously, in the course of our season in terms of the timing. I think, you know, if we go ahead and lose this game, obviously I'm not saying we're going to freaking collapse and have a horrible end to the season, but we're basically a third of the way in now, just about. And, you know, we're pushing to have a big push for the Supporter Shield and obviously MLS Cup. And, you know, when you look back to the conversation we had on that transfer kind of podcast where we were talking about how we think the club should go about transfers, I remember vividly saying I am of the opinion that Chris Mueller should go. And I remember Adam saying, business-wise, it's good for Chris to go, but sport-wise, it's good for Chris to stay. And I remember saying, yeah, but if we're bringing, you know, someone like Vanderwater in, because I don't think Vanderwater was announced at the time, then, like, it's fine. We don't need Chris. We can have someone of Vanderwater's quality. And, you know, this kind of just shows where if you're looking to have this kind of deep run into the playoffs and this deep run throughout the season to have a successful season, you need multiple points of quality throughout the team. You can't just have Nani and Vanderwater and Pereira, or Nani and Mueller and Pereira. You need a Benji. You need Chris Mueller to stay. And so I'm all for it. Part of me hopes that he keeps it up. Well, obviously, all of me hopes that he keeps it up, but part of me hopes that he continues to keep it up just to prove me wrong and say it's not even the best business decision to sell him last season, because the best business decision is to win, and he's going to help us do that.
Let me hear you say that again. The best business decision is to win a goddamn trophy.
Yeah. Best business decision is to win. So, Adam, I'm, again, just going to have to admit to my wrongness and to your rightness. What do you feel about that statement?
Oh, it feels so good.
I know we butt heads a lot. But Chris Mueller, getting on the score sheet is always a good thing for the club. And it was a gorgeous goal.
I have a higher opinion of Chris this season than a lot of people, I think. He's leading the team in assists. He's playing defense well. He is connecting well in combination play. The only thing he's lacking is the scoring boots, which, you know, he's always been streaky like that. So I have faith. I honestly, with a goal like that, he could go off and score. That wouldn't shock me at all. So, you know, I think Chris, maybe not on the stat sheet, has been as good as last season, but as a player, is having a similar impact on the game.
And he's still getting chances.
He's still getting and creating a lot of chances. Again, he's leading the team in assists. He has 4 assists this season.
Aren't that's two of five them from corners? Or is that wrong? Still,
I'm not sure.
Or free kicks.
They were like, he has 4 assists.
One of them was like the goal, Nani's goal against Cincinnati, where like he played the ball to him, and then Nani beat like 2 players and scored a worldie.
Still an assist.
It's a bit of a how do you do, but yeah, still an assist. I'll count the same.
I mean, he's... he's playing well in the team. You know, obviously his stats were a bit inflated versus how he actually played last season. Obviously the goals and assists per 90 was incredible. There's a reason he didn't get serious MVP run. Obviously guys like Pozuelo had much more of an impact on their team. Mm-hmm. You know, we can just not kid ourselves there. But I think that his stats are lining up with about the player that he is, and he's going to go on streaky scoring runs, and that's fine. You need that. Look at teams like Man City. Man City will buy a player, a really good player, and then stick them on the bench until they get hot.
I mean,
and they win because of it.
You're not wrong.
Not saying we have to go quite that far in that approach, but having lots of good talent on your team is a very good problem to have. Like I said, I would like one more really good midfielder. And we have four of them. Yeah, I would like one more, and then I would like another 10.
Yeah.
So, just, you know?
Give me all of the attacking good players.
Ready for a hot take that I'm going to release right here on the podcast that we're going to publish.
Adam. Your microphone.
Fuck.
I don't know what's going on with it, but I want to hear this hot take in crystal HD.
Right.
If you're gonna hype something,
it's gotta be something with your. I don't know with your Wi-Fi. You've been.
We need like a technical difficulties song or something.
That's the cable to my mic. Anyway, that should be better.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first time ever on this podcast that I'm saying this, we're going to publish this, and this will be a hot take. It no longer makes business nor football sense, soccer sense, to sell Daryl DK in this summer window.
I just said Not in business sense. Oh, no, yeah. Okay.
Not even business sense.
I did say it would make business sense. Please explain.
You know what makes a lot of business sense? Win a goddamn trophy.
I don't know. Winning a trophy or $18 million. Which would you prefer, Chase?
A trophy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, you play sports to win trophies, 100%. But I agree. It depends on if we are very confident and have players lined up that we think could have some level of productivity comparable to Daryl DK, which is not easy to find, obviously. There is a little bit of an argument to be made that you don't want to garner a reputation of a team that refuses to sell players. Cause like if a good young player that is in South America looking for, maybe a stepping stone, not, I know a lot of people might cringe when they hear someone call an MLS move a stepping stone. When you get that move, if you're looking at a team like Orlando City and there's a reputation around them that, oh, like they've had players in the past that really probably should have moved in a certain window to Europe when their value was high and their stock was highest and they were withheld. Like that is not a great reputation to have going forward, but it also is just like,
I mean, Adam and I had this conversation last week. I don't think we're withholding DK.
I agree. I don't think that he is, you know, banging on the door, like saying that I need to get out. I've never really gotten that vibe from him, even in sometimes a player will never come outright and say that, but you can maybe kind of get that vibe off him. We all knew that
Kyle Larin wanted to leave.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was obvious. Like it was very obvious that Kyle Larin wanted to leave. And you know what? Shoot, like that is also maybe an example where we might have not waited a little bit long, but he kind of had to force his way out. And like it's not something that you want to garner a reputation of, but it also is just like, you know, all of these like USMNT accounts saying like what we're doing is somehow immoral or something like that, which, you know, I don't want to give anyone airway just for like trolling on Twitter. Like it is what it is, but it's like we aren't, MLS isn't, I mean, I know what it, like a US men's national team factory, like that's not what we are, and like we are a professional sports team and we are here to win as anyone is, you know. So it's just like, damn, like if we have a player here who's going to be a big piece going forward and a potentially like we are in the position now where we can just shoot for every trophy that's in front of us. You know what I'm saying? And just I don't know. It's tough to be like, OK, we should sell this player because it's good for their career or whatever. Like, it's hard. Part of me still thinks that he's going to be sold. Part of me still thinks that there maybe is a chance that he should be sold.
I don't think
but I don't know.
Well, could they be waiting for Pato to come back?
For Pato? I mean, yeah, that is another thing as well. I think that if Pato came and was healthy and has scored maybe 4 goals on the year, there's a much higher possibility that Daryl DK is flying off the shelf rather than he is right now, where Pato has, in his very limited time, he's looked all right, but also it's like he has shown that maybe he's not necessarily fully fit, and there isn't as much depth at the striker position, which, you know, Tesho's been playing well. But like, if somebody is other than Daryl DK has claimed, like, I am the starting striker, I am going to be here in big moments, stuff like that, I think it's more likely that he would leave. But we just haven't had that yet, which saying that almost feels a little bit unfair to Tesho Akindele. But they might be waiting for Pato. They might be waiting for a little bit of scouting to be done for a replacement. But I don't know. Daryl DK is one of the best strikers in the league, and it's...
Here's the thing. If we have DK in place, who is just getting back and getting chemistry with the squad again, you know, he's a championship level striker in both the English Championship, in which he was the best player, and also you can win a championship with him as one of your main attacking force. Oh, that's going to be great to not edit out.
God bless you, sir.
I tried to turn away from the mic. Anyway, this episode is such a shit show.
Welcome anyway, to Lions Blog Podcast.
Sometimes we talk about soccer.
Ding. Yes, seriously.
The only edit you should do for this episode is just put my jingle right there.
Just nothing else. Okay, I'm eager to hear your point.
Okay. Okay, they're going to have... Whoever wants to buy him has to pay a premium for him now. If you want Daryl DK, you have to pay the Daryl DK fee. Then you have to pay the you're taking our starting striker in it, what could be a championship season fee. And then you're going to have to pay the we don't have a reliable replacement for him lined up fee. Which, all that combined, is I calculate that at like 25 to 30 million plus a 25% sell-on. It would have to be something absolutely bonkers like that. Because otherwise, like, unless you're just going to build another championship team with the fee that you get for DK, a la, you know, Liverpool selling Coutinho, unless you're going to get that kind of bonkers fee, it's not worth it. I mean, here's a goddamn trophy.
The only club I could see possibly being stupid enough to do that would be Everton. And I think they would cite the reason as he's American, and kind of like, you know, the American tax, where it's like you're going to get publicity overseas and here in North America, like they did when they had Tim Howard in goal. I could see Everton being stupid enough to give us 25 million for DK.
Plus 25% sell on.
Oh.
So when he balls out for Everton and they sell him for 40 million to Man City or whatever, then we get another 10.
I mean, that would that be really bonkers. Nice, but that is...
Wow. That bonkers is what I would be looking for, to basically to make it worth it to derail a possible supporter shield or MLS Cup season. You would have to give me the funds. You have to give me the funds to build another team to do this again with.
I think that this is easy to say for us, but soccer, for whatever reason, has just always been a sport where, like, I don't know, like, it's not as easy. I can't even really explain what it is, but it's like, say you have a player who is playing fantastic in the championship. Like, obviously it would make sense for that club to keep the player. But once big money teams come in with large offers for maybe Daryl for like 15 million plus, it's almost like not even up to the club as much. And I know that, like, it's going to be said, like, I mean, just flat out, yes, it is. But I don't know. There's something about this sport where they're, it's just not easy to keep hold of players, no matter how much they maybe like kind of want to stay here. I guess like I think once any player is going to start getting the offers, which Daryl DK will probably get, especially if he has a very good Gold Cup, it's just going to be hard both for the team to say no and hard for a young player to be like, all right, this is the time. I may never get an opportunity like that again if I stay an extra year.
Right,
I'm still a little pessimistic about the fact that he may be leaving us.
Well, here's the thing is...
Is he going to get sold while he's on international duty?
That is not out of the realms of possibility, but it depends on how they do in the Gold Cup. If he performs well, it's going to be that much harder for us to keep hold of him.
The thing is like, if a $15 million bid comes in for Daryl Dike, Daryl Dike is going to look at the club and be like, guys, like, this is, like, Premier League club, $15 million, like, guys, come on now. Like, he's going to be pushing for that move to go through. And it's probably going to be worth it for the club to not, you know, reject that and spend the time negotiating. Just when you have Daryl Dike saying, guys, I want this move. You guys know when you drafted me that I would be moving to Europe soon. Like, this is something that we've got going on. Plus, obviously, the stigma. If you do get that $15 million bid and you're over there saying, no, we want more, you give us 20, that's kind of where that stigma starts to grow. Of, no, you guys aren't selling. You guys are keeping hold of this player. It's immoral. Because what we're doing right now is not immoral. We haven't gotten the bid that we want, you know. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how the Daryl Dike situation develops. Very, very interesting. Any last words on that, Adam, before we get back to the game?
I want to believe in this team, you know? Mm-hmm. It's dumb. It's so dumb. It's so fan, you know? But you just want to believe that this team's different. The normal laws that govern this game, but the norms that govern how we behave about this game somehow don't apply to this team. Like, yes, everything that y'all said makes sense. I just got a feeling about DK that he, especially after he's going to be gone for the Gold Cup again, he's played, what, two and a half matches for us this year so far. Right, kind of two, because he came out, like, pretty early in this one. So I feel like he doesn't want this to be the end of his farewell tour for Orlando. Mm-hmm. You know, he missed the end of the season at Barnsley, which allowed him to gain that value to be, you know, considered for that Premier League move, which was a very selfless act by Orlando City. May I say, like, they could have just, you know, had him in training camp and had him, you know, playing beginning of the season, probably build up his value to around, you know, 8 to 10 million, and, you know, move to either a championship side or like a Portuguese side, or, you know, like a decent or an Eredivisie side. That was in the realm of possibility, just having him play in MLS. And if he beats up on MLS, he could get a good move somewhere. And he would absolutely get men's national team minutes. Them loaning him to Barnsley, knowing he would miss the beginning of the season, is a very selfless move from club perspective. And I don't want to say he owes us, because he owes everything to himself. He's very talented. He's put in the work. You know, he owes it to himself to make the best decision for himself. He doesn't owe Orlando City anything. And I want to get that straight. I'm not saying he does owe Orlando City. But is there a chance Daryl Dike feels a responsibility to see this season through, and he has camaraderie with the team and he enjoys his time here? And, you know, he knows that Europe will be waiting for him in January. Is there a possibility that happens?
I mean, there's always a possibility. Know that,
I hope that's the case.
I mean, you hope, but then
I hope that's the case.
I know that's dumb. I know that's really dumb.
I just think, as much as Daryl Dike seems like even like a fantastic individual, and I'm not just hyping out, like, that's a general consensus among everybody. I still just think that it's like any young player who is, in terms of, like, you know, moving abroad, he's in the prime of that, like, portion of his
career. I don't disagree. I don't disagree. That makes logical sense. That fits all the norms that we've observed and heard about this game.
If Daniel were here, he'd be saying, yeah, but why would he risk? Why would he stay and risk getting an injury? Yeah, torn ACL, boom, there goes his European dream.
You just don't know. Like, if when it's right in front of you, you just never know. Like, it's the same reason I think why, like, college football players will sit out of a bowl game that isn't the, you know, the
bowl games are meaningless.
But
Bowl games are meaningless.
I will concede that a trophy is not. But it's still, bowl games are absolutely meaningless. It is a trophy, but it's like, it's just you never know. Game by game, like if that interest is there right now and you have that opportunity, it's like you never know if it's going to be there 3 months from now. And I think that he'll understand that.
Unless he's going to a top six side, and let's be real here, honestly, top four, because Arsenal and Spurs are nowhere near the level they need to be. Yeah. So, unless he's going to a top four side, he's not winning a trophy there anytime soon.
It's still just the mystique of moving to Europe, honestly.
Like, I know there's the mystique of it.
Yeah. But
he's also a competitor and he wants to win. And he has, if we were mid-table, we would not be having this discussion.
Mm.
Second place in the league on points per game. And then we can add Daryl DK. You know what I'm saying? It's not just any old team. It's not, oh, this is the team that drafted me and I owe them. This is a special team, one that you can win a championship. And I'm not just, okay, we're going to differentiate between trophy and championship. Open Cup is a trophy. Supporter Shield and MLS Cup are championships. Okay? You can win a championship with this team, and that is something that will stick with you for the rest of your career. You will be a champion forever. You will be a legend at this club, immortalized, probably get a fucking statue built of you. And then, assuming we do win a meaningful championship this year, let's just make that assumption. Obviously, that is a bonkers assumption, but let's just make it. His value goes up. He basically gets to pick his landing spot, and we will be absolutely more attractive to potential players because, oh, why don't you come to the side that just won the championship? You know?
Look, your scenario is definitely 100% possible. I don't think we're saying that. We're just saying it's less likely than what we're saying. Does that make sense?
If I were a competitor, I would have to take that into account, that my chances of winning a championship are much greater staying put through the end of the MLS season than they are going to any club not named Man City, Man U, Chelsea, or Liverpool. Those are literally the four clubs he can go to and have any hope, shot, or prayer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'll agree with that. So, back onto the game, Inter-Miami game, Nani with some Nani magic. He's been having an insane season. Chase, the question on everyone's mind is how long can he sustain this? And where are we going to find time to rest him? So go ahead and give me that answer. You are Oscar Pereja. How are you going to help him sustain, you know, how are you going to help him keep the balance of when you're running hot, you better play as many minutes as possible, but also get him some rest so he's able to play as many minutes as possible, if that makes sense.
The MLS is different than most leagues because obviously with the playoff structure, like to an extent, you kind of just have to get in there and then if you have a good enough team, you can just beat anyone in front of you and go for it, which I think we have enough talent to do something similar to that. But it is still like you want to push for the supporter shield because that's a very realistic possibility. Like there's a real claim to be made that we are the best team in the East, better than New England, who sits atop us, even though we have a game in hand. You know, we're playing the sport to win trophies, obviously, win championships. But it is a thing that, like, I don't know, this might be something that a lot of people will avidly disagree with. And I don't think it's to the extent some journalists, and there's one in particular that I'm discussing, will present it. Nani does have a tendency to start off very hot because he's a fantastic player. And I don't want to say he tails off towards the end of the season because he doesn't. But it's just like, it's hard to maintain this level of just like consistent brilliance, particularly this year that he is at right now. Like Nani is one of the players that, and you know, I'm not saying he is anywhere near as good as Lionel Messi, particularly now, but Lionel Messi obviously famously is one of the players that everyone who believes in stats and data will just say like, it almost doesn't apply to him because he has the ability to consistently score from, you know, low shot XG areas. And I honestly think that you can pass that sentiment on over to Nani as well, because he is someone who consistently, not even just in Orlando, obviously, throughout his career, has done well scoring from, you know, outside of the box, which is obviously a, quite a low shot expectancy area. So what I mean by that is, like, it's understandable that it's hard to keep that going over a season, even for somebody like him. Even someone who maybe that stat doesn't necessarily 100% apply to. But anyways, a fitness is just an issue, as it is with any 34-year-old player. And I'm rambling a little bit on this question. Y'all have to forgive me. But it's
Chase,
it's
you're on the that, pod for your rambling.
I know.
That's why we got you here.
That's pretty much all that I can
bring. We don't ramble here. I don't know what you're talking about.
But
we don't ramble enough.
Yeah. I'll keep it going.
Wait. But, what?
We don't
what kind of nonsense is that? You want us to ramble more?
Yes, please.
Oh, don't you tell me. I will take that off.
Be careful what you wish for.
But he still is going to have issues with his fitness, like anybody. And you can't expect him to play even 80 minutes every game of the season, because it's just not possible. And I think a lot of that is what is going to have to fall on is what Adam has mentioned already in this episode, is that we have quality attacking depth. I think Sylvester Vandewater is a very good player. He is a goal scoring threat and is capable of creating chances as well. And I think Chris Mueller can mirror that as well. And both of them are predominantly right-sided players. So the left side is a little bit open, whether it's Benji or whether someone is able to kind of transition to that side. But I think it is just, especially with the kind of logjam of fixtures that we're probably going to be experiencing all throughout this year, because there could be Open Cup and we're taking some breaks for international competition this year. Like, there are going to be some times, I haven't looked at the schedule, honestly, at least this far, but there's going to be times, I'm sure, where we play 2 games in a week, 3 games in a week, a lot, and legs are going to get tired. And I think Nani, and he's going to be one of those players that just is going to have to be rested, even at times when maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I think fans might be a little frustrated in a game where we're playing some team who is like fifth in the East or something like that, and Nani is just coming off 2 games and he's going to have to be set. And I just think a lot of it is going to have to come down to tough decisions that are going to have to be made. And I think Oscar Pereja will do well enough deciding when he's not, and I'm sure Nani will be in open communication when he just feels like he needs a break. And I think the key here, to make a long story short, is whenever he needs a break, just to give him a break, because he is a competitor, obviously. And if there's a game where he knows his team will need him, I highly doubt that he's going to ask to sit out, even if maybe it would be good for him to do so. So if there's ever an opportunity where he looks like he needs rest or he asks for rest, give him rest, right? You know what I'm saying? And just be very careful and use him in a smart manner, however that may be, and ensure that he is going to be here for the long haul, because we are making a deep playoff run this year and we are going to need all of our best players in as good a shape as possible after such a long season.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the upcoming schedule. Orlando City at home against New York Red Bulls. Okay. Nani can start that game. We just played Friday, and that game's Saturday night. That's a week's rest. He'll be fine. But then Wednesday, we play at Chicago. I don't think it's necessary for him to even take that flight. Don't bring him. Just play Benji or Vandewater or fucking play Alvarado. Like, get some minutes in these other guys' legs that we don't. You don't need Nani to beat Chicago. You shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't. And then we're back in Orlando to play against Toronto again. I'm going to want him for that game because we've had some close games against them. And then we're home 5 days later against Philadelphia, away to NYCFC, home to Atlanta, home to Inter. I mean, give him that rest against Chicago. We're going to need him for that stretch of games. And then we're away to Cincinnati. Don't even put him on the plane. Don't even put him on the plane. And then we have a nice long rest again. And then we play away to Nashville, home to Chicago, home to Miami, home to Columbus, away to Atlanta. I mean, there are points in the season where we can get him some rest on these trips that he does not need to be on against these poor sides. And, you know, maybe he is that impactful where we will drop points. But I think if we bring Pereira and we've got DK still, or even if not, we've got Pato and Vandervater and Benji, like, I think we're going to be fine without Nani for a couple of these games against some of these poorer sides, you know? So yes, we're a lot deeper this season than we were last season.
My bad. I didn't mean to speak over you. No, we also fine. Have a manager, too, who is very famous at just being able to grind out 1-0 results. Obviously, it has a name. It is the Poppy Special. So it's something that is almost a little bit of a luxury that we are capable of winning in a beautiful footballing fashion, and we're also capable of winning in maybe a less so aesthetically pleasing way. And I think sometimes we're just going to have to rely on that. And if there's any game where maybe we're tired, like we were against Miami, though, you know, we had the whole discussion about whether or not it was. Anyways, if there's a game where we are fatigued and we're probably just going to have to go out, play ugly soccer, get a goal out of nothing and grind out a win, I don't think Nani should be involved in that game, if that makes sense.
No. You sub him up. So say it's like 1-1 in the 66th minute and it's a slugfest and both goals are penalties. You take Nani off, you take Prayer off, you put in like Desart and I don't know, like the second half.
So
and you shithouse your way to a win.
Here's the other thing. We also have a coach that's famous for not resting his stars. And that has been his biggest downfall when it comes to playoffs. In Dallas, they were always a strong team. They get to the playoffs and their stars are absolutely knackered because they've just played a full season in Texas Heat. And he's not resting people. It's an Oscar Pereja thing. And we just need to hope that he learns from his past mistakes and that Nani is open and willing to taking a couple of breaks. Freaking go to Disney with your family instead of
playing
the Chicago game.
You know how dehydrated you can get at Disney? I want him nothing nowhere near that death trap. Fucking Nani, if you're listening, which you shouldn't be, do not go to Disney, please. For me.
I'm telling you, just do not get on the Chicago flight. If he is even on the flight, I'm gonna have an uproar on this.
Oh no, no, he shouldn't play. He should not play Chicago this season.
No, seriously.
No, if we play Chicago or Cincy, which I think, yeah, we have games against both of those teams again. No, don't play him.
Yeah. So
no way.
Before we get out of here, let's go ahead and get some good discussion on Michael Halliday. That kid's good. That kid's very good. Adam and I had a discussion about him last week. So, Chase, I'm eager to hear your thoughts on the young right back.
Yeah, I like a lot of people. I was relatively unimpressed following the New York Red Bulls game. Mm-hmm. And in all honesty, maybe this is going to scream that I'm a dirty, filthy casual or something like that. But in the San Jose game, I saw a lot of people talking him up. I honestly didn't really recall much of what he did. So I didn't really have much of an opinion on him from that game.
How did you not recall what he did?
Yeah, that's,
were you at the game?
No. I was at the game. Okay, I told y'all I had a little 6 a.m. shift the next day. So I left at the end of the first.
Oh, yeah.
Chase
left during the rain delay.
Let's expose myself. That's because
I texted y'all and I was like, hey, anyone in the stadium? Chase is like, I'm leaving because I got to get up early. I'm like,
boo. Had a 12-hour shift.
That's nothing, bro. You can do that sleep deprived.
I literally work 12 hours every single day.
Yeah, literally. Come on.
Listen, bro. I'm not used to being
I work 12 hours to
labor, man. Just get the food industry, bro. I'm telling you.
I worked like 14 yesterday.
Chase, yeah. If you ever find the time, watch the second half of the San Jose game.
Yeah.
And he's on the near side of the camera. So that's kind of why you can see everything, because he's like right next to where the camera is, where that camera angle is. And you see every tackle. You see every pass.
Completely
you
fair.
See every touch. And
I probably should have, but I think once they were up 5-0, I was done watching with a tactical eye or critical eye even. But anyways, like I was after that, like, you know, I didn't really have much of an opinion on him, if I'm being honest. Like, I didn't hold the New York game against him because he was making his professional debut, and that's never easy. But I thought this game, I thought he was started a little bit shaky in possession. Mm-hmm. And I think that he got a lot better with that. But I thought that he was fantastic defensively. Like, he was doing that thing that a lot of young defenders will do, where he was pressuring anyone that was near him 100%, 24/7. And honestly, like, I appreciate that level of commitment. And obviously, I'm sure he knows he is a professional soccer player. Sometimes you maybe want to stand off a little bit, but he was probably keyed up as anybody would be in their third career game. And I still thought that he was doing really well. Like, he was coming up against, even into the second half, he was coming up against, you know, DP level players, and he was dispossessing them, pressuring them well, holding the ball off. And he was, I think he grew into the game on the attacking side of it. Like, he was doing well when he was receiving the ball, just playing it quick, because, you know, you're not always asked to do anything special. Like, just play it back to Antonio Carlos and let the play develop. And also, one thing that I thought that he was doing exceptionally well on a few occasions was, I think Juan is excellent when he has space on the right side to exploit, and he knows when to run in and fill that wing when we are maybe on the left side of our of the field, or the ball is in the midfield and we're able to hit him on a switch and he's able to exploit that space. I honestly thought Mikey Halliday did that very well on a few occasions. He was getting forward, and the few times he was putting in a delivery, it was pretty good as well. And I don't mean to be hyperbolic about it. And, you know, there were some issues in his game, as there will be for any 18-year-old. But there was just a lot to be excited about here. Like, he grew as a player. There were moments too, like, I am a huge fan of, like, the shithousery, the dark arts, whatever you would like to call. And I think that there were a few moments too where, like, he was going down in crunch time and faking an injury, and he wasn't backing down from a lot of players and stuff like that. And I really just think that that is quite admirable for a young player. And, you know, I feel like I'm getting into, like, the realms of hyperbole here, but I don't know. There was just a lot to be admired here. Solid defensively. Really grew well into the game as an attacking fullback as well, and I think that there's a lot to be proud about here. Not necessarily saying he should be a starter, excuse me, but I think that there is something that points to signs of a good depth fullback now, and potentially a starter in the future, which is all you want out of your academy.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very, very impressed. Everything that you touched on, I agree with. For me, he's kind of like a perfect mix between Juan and Kyle Smith. Just in terms of end product, he needs to get better, but he's literally 18 years old. I'm not too worried about that right now. So I can't wait to see how he grows. We talked about last podcast. I think he does have European potential, especially seeing how quickly Brian Reynolds got moved on. And Brian Reynolds was what, 20, right?
Yeah, dog. Joe Scally got a move before he really even played.
Yeah, and so, like, especially with fullbacks, if you're fast, if you're technical, which Michael Halliday needs to be more technical to go over to Europe, which Adam highlighted last podcast, but he has the speed and he has the defense. So I think it's only a matter of time before we start to see him getting some interest and some eyes focusing on him. I think some scouts right now are going to start talking. You know how scouts work, word of mouth a lot of times. Oh, hey, this player had a really good game, or I heard about this player. Well, I think someone's going to say Orlando City have a young right back, 18 years old. He's got a lot of growth potential. Just see how he's played in these last two games. Let's keep an eye on him for a little bit and see how he grows over this season. And I think we could see him leave before we even really get to reap the rewards of him. And obviously that's projecting insanely, but I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, he very clearly has a lot of talent. And I do agree that American right backs, there's something about them that they are just garnering a lot of European interest. Like, Aaron Herrera was linked to a move, and obviously a lot of various players have gotten moves to European clubs from the MLS. I think Michael Halliday is probably going to obviously, I'm sure as everyone knows, he's going to have to play a little bit more to prove mm-hmm. that. But I think that that's a possibility that, you know, maybe not this season, but the next, he will kind of force his way in. And stranger things have definitely happened. He is, like Adam said, he needs to improve it as his technical ability. He gave the ball away a little bit in the beginning, but there's just a lot of upside here. And hopefully it is the beginning of the Orlando City talent factory here as we start to see some more homegrowns come through, which shout out. Ooh, actually, this is something that I probably should check. We're recording this in the night where they're playing Sacramento.
They won 2-1.
They won 2-1. I did see that Sacramento got one back, but, you know, they're on to the finals of the MLS Next Cup. There's a lot of talent in there. Center back partnership looked really good. I think our striker is looking good.
Is the center back the one that the homegrown that signed with us or no?
Yeah, I do believe so, Mr. William. And there's also this is something that I think we all of us maybe need to get a little bit better on is academy knowledge. But there's another Peruvian center back as well, who I think has been his partner. And I thought that they looked really sharp. So, yeah, good things coming. And hopefully Michael Halliday and Benjamin Michel as well as the start of either players we can sell for profit or first team players coming into the squad. It's a beautiful thing. We're definitely looking more like a true football club as time goes on.
Any final thoughts, Adam, before we head out of here?
No, I think, there's one final thought, I guess. Fuck Miami. Mm. Get fucked, you plastic ass daddy's money, sons of bitches that are somehow more annoying than fucking Atlanta fans. Get fucked.
That's a great note to end it on.
So go ahead, Andy.
Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me at Kosher Taco Truck on the internet things like Twitter and Instagram. Though soccer for Twitter, you probably don't care about my Instagram. It's just food.
Chase.
You can find me on Twitter at VomitsOCSC.
You can find me at LionsBlog1 or right here where you are listening right now. We're glad you're listening. We hope you guys are enjoying the season. Hope you guys are enjoying the podcast. And you guys have a good rest of your night.
They won't enjoy this one.
Have another chance!